Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June 28th, 2001. In the fireside room this evening are David Wee and Thomas Christian. Today's session number is WED-2001-1, and it's titled Baseball in America, Who's on First and Why Do We Care So Much? Let's listen in.
I'm a baseball player playing for Dachau America out in Port Angeles, Washington, on the peninsula. And my goal every night during the school year when baseball is on is to get my homework done, eat dinner, wash the dishes, then go downstairs and watch the Mariners game.
Admirable. Good order. We hope that we can all have fun tonight talking about baseball, especially here in the Pacific Northwest. It's a wonderful year to be talking and thinking about baseball. Even those of us back from the heartland in Minnesota, the Twins are having, after 9 consecutive losing seasons, the Twins are having a great year. The Cubs are in first place. The Phillies are in first place.
The Yankees are.
So this is going to be one of those seasons to remember. And it's fun to talk about baseball this year. And I find it fun to talk about baseball every year. And as I mentioned in the description of this hour, part of our intent is to try to find out, and we'd like your ideas, why it is that so many people care so much about baseball, pay such attention to it. And there are all sorts of ways to get at that. Now, when I teach the course at St. Olaf, each class period begins with batting practice. To sort of get us warmed up and waiting for the stragglers to find their seats. So I pitch batting practice, and my arm's a little sore, so Thomas is going to help me with that, for one thing. And the batting practice is asking some interesting baseball questions. It's not always important to know the answer as to be interested in what the question is, and that certain things could actually have happened, or certain interesting details about baseball. You want to toss the first few?
I have a couple of trivia questions. I'll start out with the nicknames. I'm sure all of you guys know who A-Rod is.
Yeah.
You guys know who I-Rod is.
Who is I-Rod?
Just shut out.
Fudge.
A little bit, yeah, there's two, actually. That's a little harder. But, let's see. Bone.
Jay Buhner.
I'm sure you guys won't get this one. The Gorilla. Honus Wagner. He was the shortstop for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and played around 1905. Oh. And let's see now for some stats. Who is first on the all-time list for RBIs in a single season?
Jimmy Fox. Eric Wilson.
Yep. Who is, let's see. I'm trying to think. Who is, this will be an easy one. Who is second for most consecutive games played? Who is first for batting average in a season?
Mel Martin.
Ty Cobb.
Yep.
Ty Cobb?
You might want to repeat some of these answers, because some of us know-nothings here are confused, because we don't know if they're right or not.
The Tide Pod is the right one.
Okay, great.
How about third? No, I don't know that one. Second for most stolen bases for his career.
Lou Brock.
Lou Brock.
Yep. And what was the first major league team?
New York Pirates.
Cincinnati Reds.
Brooklyn Dodgers.
Cincinnati Red Stockings. That's right. What year did the Cincinnati Red Stockings first start?
1901.
1903.
1856. Whoa! See why he is here.
I'm gonna hand it to David now.
Okay, I'll ask a few more. Who hit into the only all-Cuban triple play? The answer is
Tony Oliva.
No.
Fidel Castro.
I think the first baseman would have dropped the ball if Fidel had hit into a near triple play. This actually happened in 1960. Whitey Herzog, who later became a manager and general manager, he was playing for Kansas City against the Washington Senators, who a year later became the Minnesota Twins. And Whitey Herzog hit a ball that went from Camilo Pascual to Julio Baquerto to Jose Valdivielso. Only time in recorded history that has happened. He hit into a triple play on his last at-bat in his major league career. You know, what a way to go out. A good guess would be that it would be one of those hapless Mets back in 1962. And it was. It was Joe Pignatano, catcher for the Mets. Hit into a triple play which ended the game, ended the season, and ended his career.
How many games did they lose?
Ask him, he's the Mets fan.
120. Is that right? Okay. And out of a season, 154 games at that time, and they lost 120 of them. Here's one of my favorite ones. Who hit a home run in his first time at bat in the major leagues? And this has been done by 30 or 40 players, doesn't it? Hit a home run the first time at bat ever. And then, for the rest of his 21-year career in the major leagues, never hit another home run. Yeah, it wasn't a pitcher.
Is it a pitcher?
It was a pitcher. That would be a good guess. And it was Hoyt Wilhelm. Had a long career as a relief pitcher, but imagine, first time at bat, a homer, and then never again.
One more year.
I get some of my favorite trivia questions out of this book entitled Who Was Harry Steinfeld? And Other Baseball Trivia Questions. Now, I've got to tell you a little story about the last time I had a class like this, and one of the reasons I knew I had to have Thomas with me. I was doing this class at St. Olaf, mostly alumni, and I said what I just did to you. I get some of my good questions out of this book called Who Was Harry Steinfeld? 9-year-old girl raised her hand to give the answer. Some of you know the answer? She said, well, he was the third baseman in the famous 1908 Chicago Cubs infield of Tinker to Evers to Chance. Now, those three have become a kind of a famous trio because they were immortalized in a poem. And Harry Sonnenfeld was just as good an infielder, but his name didn't go into the poem. But this 9-year-old girl knew this answer. Then the whole class did what we're about to do. Some of these numbers are famous baseball numbers, and you know, sometimes it's surprising to those who don't pay very much attention to baseball how many statistics and numbers fans know. So I'll test you on this. Thomas can check and see if you're right. What's number 70?
Mark McGuire's
single season home run record. 61.
Roger Maris.
60.
Babe Ruth.
Okay. Babe Ruth hit 60, and that was the standard. What year did he hit 60? 1927. What year did Roger Maris hit 61? 1961. And when did McGuire hit 70? 98, Thomas said. Okay. Okay, so these numbers are sort of etched in memory. 755.
Hank Aaron.
Okay, Hank Aaron's career number of home runs, and he broke Babe Ruth's record of 714. That's right. This number, 2,130. It's the number of consecutive games that Lou Gehrig played until he had to leave the game because of the disease that now bears his name, Lou Gehrig's disease. And this is the record that Cal Ripken broke. And Thomas and I were trying to remember.
It's over 2,500.
Yeah. Does anyone know the current record for consecutive games that Cal Ripken Jr.?
2,535.
Okay. Well, a lot of us haven't learned that number yet. I don't know that one yet, but this one has been for so many years etched in my mind that I use it as my pin. So, you know, if you find my credit card out in the street, you're in luck. That's a number I know I won't forget. 215.
Mendoza.
Okay, can you explain?
Well, Mendoza played for the predecessor to the Mariners, I think, or the Mariners, and the Mendoza line is the batting average below which you must not fall. And some people say it's 200, but Mendoza actually, I think his career was 215.
Yeah. Lifetime average of Mario Mendoza, 215. And any player is ashamed to bat, any full position player is ashamed to bat below that. So it's called the, just like 300, the batting average of 300 is sort of the standard that good batters try to achieve. The Mendoza line is the spot that they want to stay above. 511.
Barry Bonds' current home run?
Well, it could be, but that's
Willie Mays?
No. I think I heard it.
Cy
Young's career wins. The most number of wins any baseball player has, any pitcher has ever had in a career. When I was teaching this class last month, nobody in the whole room, except the 9-year-old girl, she raised her hand. She knew all the answers, but she politely let everyone else guess. And, came to 511, nobody answered it, so she said that's the number of Cy Young. And then a lawyer my age, who was sitting right close to her, a lawyer from Chicago, raised his hands and said that's also the number of career home runs of Ernie Banks. And she very quietly said, no, Ernie Banks had 512. And she was right. We looked it up. This one, 1.12.
Bob Gibson's ERA in 1968.
That's right. One of the lowest, if not the lowest, earned run average by a season-long starting pitcher, Bob Gibson, 1968. 301. What period? You want to try? Batting average of 301. Anyone know what's significant about that? That's the lowest batting average that has ever won a league championship. And this was done also in 1968. Carl Yastrzemski won the American League batting championship with an average of only 301. And these two things taken together are interesting because they are signals of an imbalance between offense and defense. And Major League Baseball decided after 1968 the pitchers had too much advantage. That was also the year that Denny McLain won 31 games. That's right. And that's the first time that anyone had won over 30 games for decades. So the Major League Baseball lowered the pitching mound from 15 inches to 10 inches high. And it's the only dimensional change of any significance that's been made in pretty much a century. One of the things baseball tries to do is to have a perfect balance between offense and defense, which is one reason the game is so interesting. You've watched lots of baseball games. Imagine how different the game would be if the distance from home plate to first base, which is what?
90 feet.
What if it were only 89 feet? Or if it were 91 feet? You've seen so many close plays at first base that you realize the balance between offense and defense would be significantly different with just that small amount of change. 56.
Joe DiMaggio's record.
Joe DiMaggio hit in 56 consecutive games in what year? 1941. These guys are smart.
How many games did he hit after he missed, or then was the number of consecutive games?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
But there was a string right after that.
Yeah, and a few years earlier in the minor leagues, when he played for the San Francisco Seals, he hit 65 straight games. So this wasn't a fluke for DiMaggio.
Do you agree that that's going to be the hardest record ever to fall?
Probably. Yeah, I think that. That may stand.
Just imagine what a big score would be.
Second? Who's the second most? Consecutive games.
He made a run down.
A base hit in consecutive games. Are you right about Pete Rose?
Top baller.
Kenny Lando got a whole bunch.
31. It is Pete Rose, I believe. Right. 44? 44.
Yeah.
Okay. And 406.
Ted Williams.
Ted Williams, work lifetime.
47?
Yeah, the best. The last time a batter batted over 400 for a full season. And that, too, was 60 years ago since anyone has had a batting average that high. Well, you're good. They were good.
Weren't there eight wins this guy?
What player broke up the most no hitters in a career by getting the only hit in the game? Good guess.
Cesar
Tovar. five times he got the only hit in the ball game and ruined a pitcher's attempt. Okay. Well, we're warmed up, I think. Don't you think? Because of our summer theme, I'm going to read to you a story that was in Newsweek last August. I love this little story. Which has to do with being called by name and gets to us about baseball and is a beginning of our inquiry here into why baseball is so interesting for us. This is entitled "The Town That Gave a Man His Life Back." This is written by a woman named Edith Hamilton. Every spring when the umpire yells "play ball" in the first game of the season, I get teary-eyed again, wondering how that ball must have looked coming at my father on that pitcher's mound so long ago. It was a line drive in the summer of 1921, 80 years ago, she's pretty well. A purely magic time for my father, who had been discovered by a baseball scout on the Red Clay Ballpark in the Mississippi Hill Country. He was 26, newly married, playing pickup ball after work. He was a southpaw. Maybe later we'll ask him why left-handers call him a southpaw. He was a southpaw, and family legend says Dad's blazing fastball was so hard it once split his brother's hand when he caught it. How a baseball scout ever heard of my father remains a mystery, but he gave him a minor league contract to play in Exeter, Nebraska in the spring of 1921. Anyone have ever been in Exeter, Nebraska?
I'm sure you have, haven't you?
No.
Oh, I haven't. I was gonna guess that.
Exeter is a small town in southeast Nebraska where the plains begin. Its residents were crazy about baseball. They had a ball field and grandstands and an intense rivalry with other minor league teams. My father's pitching statistics quickly made him a hero. My mother and their infant daughter, it's herself, were feted by the townspeople with gifts and attention. The team was winning, and a regional title seemed certain as summer began to wane. Dad never talked about the line drive that shattered his ankle, ended his baseball career, and left him with a lifelong limp. In later years, he would show his grandchildren how to throw a curve or a slider, and in my mind's eye, I can still see their small fingers as he wrapped them around a baseball to demonstrate. But he never talked about that hit, capital T, capital H. I was an adult before I understood that most of us do not want to talk about our worst defeats. In 1958, this is 37 years later, while driving my parents to Kansas to visit my brother, I discovered that we were not far from Exeter. And I suggested that we drive there just to see the town that I had heard about all my life. My father protested that he did not want to go, but my mother and I persuaded him. When we reached Exeter, my parents were astounded. Interstate 80 had missed the town, and the place was unchanged, quiet and serene. We were walking up the main street with my mother saying, "This is the cafe where we ate. This is the store where we bought our groceries." When we passed an elderly man who tipped his hat to us, stopped, did a classic double take, and came running back yelling, "Lefty Hamilton! You're Lefty Hamilton! You are! You are!" Don't ever tell me that baseball is not otherworldly. We went into a nearby cafe where the man got on the phone and began making calls. Soon a group of Lefty Hamilton fans who had known my father 37 years before hurried in and the party began. The laughter was so loud that the years seemed to vanish, leaving only that long ago summer perfectly preserved in time. I sat back watching my parents. They looked younger. My father looked happily dazed. The words of an old song came back to me, memories how they linger. The talk swirled around the table. "How about that shutout game you pitched against? The day when you balked? And that suicide squeeze?" When Dad expressed surprise that people still remembered him, a man replied, "Of course we remember. It's baseball, Lefty." I was dazed myself. These people, these wonderful people, still recalled my father, Lefty Hamilton, after all those years. He had pitched on a minor league team in a very small town for one brief summer season, and they remembered him. My parents' home had burned down years before the Exeter trip, and the only photo that had survived the flames was one of my father and the Exeter baseball team. It is charred on three corners, a priceless memento. And looking at it used to sadden me, because I felt something had gone out of my father's life that summer. To have a dream come true and then have it snatched away so quickly is more devastating than never having it come true at all. But the Exeter trip changed my father. It reassured him he was not forgotten, that the name of Lefty Hamilton still lives in baseball's pantheon of players. This October, she says, I'll watch the World Series and I will forget the obscene salaries, the fields that resemble amusement parks under the lights, the rent-a-player late-season trades. I won't even think about the ticket prices that bar many fans from ever seeing a major league game in person. I'll be caught up in the ageless pageantry of baseball, and when that first pitch crosses the plate, all my memories will be of Exeter, Nebraska, a little town that gave a man's life back to him. Isn't that beautiful?
Is that from Nebraska Life magazine?
It was from Newsweek.
Oh, Newsweek.
Yeah. August 14th, 2000. So maybe I will make it to Exeter, Nebraska. I'd like to see that town. Okay, a few things about baseball and in American culture, and then a few things about sports, and then we'll just talk about any topics that you'd like to do. Do you remember what gift the United States government gave to the Iranian hostages when they returned after their 444 days? And they came back in 1981. The nation trying to figure out what can we give these hostages who've been removed from our culture for so long. They gave them all lifetime passes to Major League Baseball games. What do you think the Holden Village miners built on the only piece of level ground that was here in this valley when they first got out here?
Not a
leverage. And it, as you walk on the path toward Hart Lake and Holden Lake, you're walking right down the right field foul line and the first baseline. If you look into the bushes on the hillside there, you can still see the remnants of the bleachers. There are still the planks that people sat on. And there's a wonderful picture down in the pool hall, just when you come down the steps from outside. One of those pictures is of a baseball game going on there. There must be hundreds of people in the stands out there watching a baseball game on what, before the tailings happened, you know, was the only flat spot out here. A lot of people find baseball to be important, significant, and something that they want to participate in. I'm a teacher of literature, and the course I teach is an English course and an American Studies course, but it's really interdisciplinary, and these are some of the fields of study that we get into in that course. First one being literature, and many of you know that one of the most famous poems in the English language in America is what? Ready to go. Listen to this.
I had to memorize this at school, and I tried to, it was about a month ago, I had to try to remember it, but I just hard, so I'm going to read it. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 42, but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first and Bowers did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A strangely few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. We thought if only Casey could get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake. And the latter was a Lulu, and the former was a Kate. So upon that stricken multitude, Grimmel called his staff, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake the much despised tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted, and the men saw what had occurred, Blake was safe at second, and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more arose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled through the dell. It knocked upon the mountain, it recoiled upon the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile upon his face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt that Casey was it. 'Twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 10,000 hands applauded as he wiped them on his shirt. And when the riding pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eyes, and a sneer curled on Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered spear comes hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the steady batsman, the ball on his bed. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Straight one," the umpire said. Then from the benches black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like a beating of a storm wave upon a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpires!" cried someone in the stands. And it's likely they'd have killed him if Casey had not raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's vision shone. He stilled the rising tumult and bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said strike two. "Fraud!" cried the maddened thousands, and an echo answered fraud. But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face go stern and cold, they saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again. The smile is gone from Casey. The smile is gone from Casey's face, his teeth are clenched in hate. He pops with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Oh, somewhere men are laughing. somewhere in this favored land. Oh, man. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Somewhere bends are playing, and somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville, for mighty Casey has struck out.
I'm not going to take the time right now, I think, to go through all of the kind of subtopics that baseball gets involved in, but literature, language, we spend a lot of time on religion and the frightening similarity between our American devotion to sport and our religious practices. You know, if we took the time, we could fill this chalkboard with all sorts of similar things between baseball and our attention to our sport and our attention to religion.
Life.
Okay. What are some of the things you can think of that where what we do with religion and what we do in sport are similar?
Designated hitter.
Oh, that's a supply pastor?
Yeah. Also fighting over the issue.
Fighting over the issues?
There's a ritual in baseball.
There's ritual. Lots of rituals.
And Sunday.
Okay. Professional football and its cathedrals.
Sometimes we catch something.
Organ music. And we come home.
Praising the Lord.
Okay. We sing.
Protest.
Okay. We hand out bulletins. Right. Scorecards.
Concessions.
Penance. sacrifice, right?
Calling on the Almighty.
Calling on the Almighty.
Intervention.
Pardon?
Intervention.
Intervention. Okay.
Hot dog.
Taking, collecting money.
Throwing someone out.
Throwing somebody out. In the beginning. When the Bible begins, in the beginning, God created. Well, good. We can. There's a lot of it, and the deeper we get into it, the more it tells us about ourselves. And sport is sometimes called the natural religion, and sometimes the national religion, because if religion is in part the things we give our highest priorities to, if that's one definition of religion, look around us as a nation and notice where we give our attention and our money. But one of the things that I thought would be interesting for us today is the psychology aspect of it. You may have noticed that we entitled this session, Who's In First? And Why Do We Care So Much? I've usually named it Who's On First, which is the Abbott and Costello routine that many of you have heard. But what we all care about right now is who's in first, first place.
Mariners.
Okay, and all the other teams we mentioned. Now, why do we feel so good about it when our team is doing well? Or doing, well, there's only one team that's ever had a record as good as the Mariners so far.
Right. 1912 Giants.
Okay. Only the 1912 New York Giants started out as well as the Mariners have up to this point. Why does the whole community? I mean, they haven't been in Seattle for the spring and
not
summer.
Not just Seattle.
Not just Seattle, right? The whole region. But it's happening in Minnesota too. You know, so that I have experience.
Community pride.
Community pride. Okay. And why would we take pride, why would we choose to take pride in a baseball team, which is really a bunch of hired mercenaries who make more money than they should, right? Well, maybe, right? Just maybe. Why would we focus on a baseball team?
Because they're the only ones that go to other communities that really do things.
Okay, they constantly get up and go someplace else and win games.
Or other people come to Seattle and we would beat them.
Okay, or we visitors come and we beat them up.
we like attention and we want to feel better than somebody.
Okay, it's that human need to be better than somebody else. Okay. But it's these 25 players who are better than somebody else, not us.
Oh, they
represent us. Okay.
We saw that work in Detroit in 1968 when they beat the Cardinals, which came just right after the urban uprising in Detroit. It's a tremendous healing kind of thing.
Okay.
Really, one of the big things is that, I mean, the S on his hat stands for Seattle. They're not just the Mariners, they're the Seattle Mariners. And people from Seattle associate that. And you think about all of the old away uniforms, the only insignia they had on them at all was where they were from.
Yeah.
So there's a certain mystique that goes back, dating back to the how far back baseball goes.
So there's that identification of locale, sometimes just the city, but, you know, my hat has an M for Minnesota. It's the whole state and even beyond that, you know, for whom Minnesota is the closest team. Yeah.
I think the thing about sports is it has a final score and there is a result, whereas life is so many complex issues, and many times there's shades of gray. there's a final game score. There's a winner or loser. I think people like that.
Okay.
It's a relief from life.
There's some closure to the story every day.
Right.
Okay.
The flip side of that is, though, that there's really no closure. And tomorrow we can win if we didn't today. If you're a Cubs fan, you know that well. It's always next year.
That's right. It's always next year.
Yep.
I don't know much about baseball, but when I go to a game and they have home runs, I just can't help but jumping up and down and screaming and all of that is kind of a euphoric feeling. You can go let go of a lot of tension that way and just have plain fun.
Okay. It's the fun of the game. Yes.
Well, it's fun seeing how they're going to win. Because one game it might be a home run, and another game it might be great pitching and a shutout.
Okay.
And every game can be different in baseball, especially with the Mariners.
Yeah.
You really never know how it's going to go. Whereas, like, if you were a Bulls fan, you kind of always knew it was going to be Michael Jordan scoring most of the points or Shaq with the Lakers. But with the Mariners, it's every game a little different.
Okay. So it's the variety of this particular sport. Okay.
I'm not a baseball fan. I do live in Seattle, however. I should take points for that. The thing that amazes me, though, is knowing Thomas and knowing of our older grandchildren, the interest that they've taken and the facts that they know about baseball, that speaks well for several things, really. And as I sit here, totally ignorant of all these statistics, and I hear these people spout off who they were and when they were and all that, It's overwhelming. I think it's a fantastic thing that it has given so many people so much to look forward to and so much to learn.
Yeah. It has a long history. When did Major League Baseball games start?
I don't know. It's not 1856. The Stockings just run around to different cities just playing teams.
Yeah.
It'll probably outlive Pokemon.
Yeah. 1869, we started playing Major League ball, and then we started having two leagues in 100 years ago, National League, the Junior Circuit, right, that's what they call them. They started. Lloyd?
Yep. Well, one of the things I've observed between baseball, football, and basketball is that in the case of baseball versus football, football is so much more wimpy. You don't see when the 10th inning or 9th inning comes about, you don't see the players bending on one knee and freezing the ball. They've got to play the whole thing through. And in basketball, you've got a fourth grader who's got to shoot it 10 feet high, or you've got a 7-foot guy that only has got 3 feet to go, which takes care of which his arm takes care of it. I just think there's a better ending.
Okay. Yeah, other things about this particular sport that attracts us.
Yeah, well, the economics thing, that businesses prey off of advertising and make money. And it brings even a bigger community into
okay. The economics is one of the big debates that many communities are having now, you know, the value to the community economically of having a major league sports team up against the arguments that many people have that we aren't paying our nurses enough or our teachers, and, you know, that we should be putting more money, if we've got it, into other worthwhile things, social programs. So there will constantly be that kind of debate. Question back there.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about baseball, I'm a kind of a well-rounded sports fan, but I think you'll find most people, they're like football, basketball, hockey fans, and then there's baseball fans. And the thing that's interesting about baseball is it's such an intricate game. I mean, it's a chess match if you watch it, and it would you. I wish they could develop some device to get into the manager's heads. You know, like we can see the puck flying around by the, you know, the red glow of the puck, or we can, you know, hear if we, you know, microphones and helmets and stuff in football, but we don't know what's going on in their helmets, so, or in the manager's head, so you don't know why they bring in a lefty hitter if they bring the lefty pitcher? Or, you know, what? You know, why do you do a suicide squeeze or a pinch hit or what have you? So there's a lot of elements there that other sports just aren't. It's, you know, football, it's, you know, you're down the goal line, put the big 260-pound fullback in the backfield and let him run.
Yeah.
Basketball, throw it to Shaq. But in baseball, there's a lot of ways you can get around and you have to be a team. And
yeah, which was the point you were making back there in the corner about the various ways in which a game can go. There's a wonderful 300-page book that describes a single baseball game, that the intent of which is to get inside the manager's head and in the batter's head and the pitcher's head. Is, if you're interested in reading in some detail about all the strategic thinking that is happening, it's called Nine Innings by Daniel Okrent. And that's a good insight into those kinds of things.
I was going to say, I think one of the more appealing things about baseball is that the size of the player is not a factor so much as it is in football and basketball.
Yeah, I think that's true, that, you know, many of us can imagine ourselves, even as adults, fielding a grounder and throwing out the batter, or maybe getting a hit. But there's no way some of us, built like me, can imagine carrying the football through a professional line. Yeah.
Well, I think this year proved that it doesn't matter how much you play a player, how much you pay them, they could still be on the bottom team in the division.
Yeah.
And leave behind the team that lands on top, which is why this year for the Mariners is so sweet. But for our, as we work with kids, it's really important to point out to them that $25 million a year that A-Rod's getting is not going to get him that World Series ring. It takes the entire team.
There's a certain poetic justice, isn't there?
But it really does take every player. You can have the very best pitcher. You have Randy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't win beyond,
and Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
You know, those of you who don't follow it real closely, three of the greatest superstars in baseball were with the Mariners, and in the last 3 years they've all been sent elsewhere. And now that they're gone, the Mariners are playing better ball than almost any team in history.
I'm still going to play devil's advocate and say, who cares?
Okay, well, that's part of the question.
Why care?
Yeah.
I think probably in respect to cares, that question is that probably more people care because as kids, probably more people played baseball than any other sport when they were kids and they were interested.
Or kickball.
It's just really fun to watch these plays. I mean, you watch Ichiro climb up the wall and slide in, and my favorite play he made, he made this catch and then he hit this, sort of triumphant little thing.
Yeah.
So it lifts our hearts, it makes us happy.
Yeah. Do those baseball plays lift our hearts more than when the Seahawks score a last second?
Yeah.
Okay, we know why.
Well, I care about baseball because I think I was brought up in St. Louis. I was a big Cardinal fan and had a big stack of baseball cards and wasn't much of a player, but learned to love the sport. And when you adopt a baseball team as your own, you become familiar with all of its endearing qualities and some of its annoying ones too. It's as if you're a child that you know better than anybody else. You know the lineup, you know the positions, you know the players, you know how they're doing, you learn about their personal stories. And then they're out there doing this performance art, which has multi-dimensional aesthetic qualities and psychological ones as well. So, you know, your child, of course, is the most beautiful, the most talented, the most delightful creature on the planet. Well, you can, in a way, have those feelings about your team, and when your team is performing well, and your team members are happy and everybody recognizes how good they are, well, you know what that's like as a parent.
Yeah. Okay.
But now, I find this interesting because people I've known can care that much about a team and then they move somewhere else. And suddenly then the other team with all these other players, I mean, how much is it that team and those players versus where you live?
Yeah.
I mean, I just always find that odd.
Yeah, the fact that we tend to associate ourselves with whoever is closest at hand, the local boys, you know. But there are some fans, and probably some of you here, who grew up being a fan of the Cubs, and now you live in Florida, and it's still the Cubs. There are New Yorkers who, you know, never forgave the owners for moving the Giants and the Dodgers to California. But are always Dodgers fans and always Giants fans, even though they still live in New York. And others of us flip flop according to who is the closest team at hand. Yes.
Yeah, I grew up in Iowa, which kind of gave us the luxury of being able to pick any team we wanted.
Yeah.
Because there was no team close.
Yeah.
And so your neighbor was a Yankee fan and this person was, you know, just all over the place. But now I live near the Twin Cities, and for me the difference is reading the paper and feeling like you know the people involved. And the everyday quality of, you can always turn on the radio 6 nights out of 7 and it's on.
So
there's a number of movies that open with the radio, the baseball game in the background.
Yeah.
They help set the scene.
Okay.
In
so it's like they are your neighbors or your family, and they're important to you for that reason. You can pick them from wherever you want. Yes.
I told you at lunch the other day in a national magazine or newspaper that the people his age, the baseball, is falling off tremendously. There's been a decrease of 25% nationally. It wasn't New York Times. I did an article on it. The reasons given was the kids are bored. They feel that it's not enough action.
Yep.
So in their generation, I think that's changing. I think there's tremendous change going on there, which we do not. I'm from Cleveland, so I mean, we have a very good baseball team for a number of years, as you people know.
Yeah.
I think that the generation, I coach kids, and I can see that what the issue is there. Because, and I talked to you about that, you know, they're on the outfield, they just sit there, think it's boring.
Yeah.
I think that they're more interested in playing other games, they can have more participation now. What effect that's going to have in the long run is going to be interesting to see, because I didn't realize there had been such a fall off in the kids playing baseball. That's why Bush, as I indicated to you, had the game at the White House to try to promote the Little League again, because there's a tremendous fall off in that league.
Does this seem to be the case, Thomas, with your friends, that fewer people are interested in baseball and soccer is getting to be more important or basketball?
I think that he's partly right. Fewer kids, there are still a lot of kids that are interested in baseball, but they really don't know very much. They will just say, I like the Mariners, and like there are kids who all they could name is Alex Rodriguez and Ken Griffey Jr. and maybe Randy Johnson, Jay Buhner. They couldn't, you know, they really don't know much about baseball. There's a lot of those kids. And then there's a bunch that know a fair amount. And there's, I don't know anybody else who knows as much as me.
I just have an anecdote of the opposite of that cavalier attitude for baseball. My mother is 93. 2 years ago, I called her up on a Sunday afternoon. I'm her only living son. She said, call back later, the Twins are on.
I have a question for Thomas. Two questions. Thomas, am I right in thinking that David is your dad?
Yeah.
Okay. My question is, first, you get the first chance to answer. Who of the Minnesota Twins over the years is your dad a very remarkable resemblance? His haircut, his profile, Who might that be? He's a well-known player. I'm not sure he's in the Hall of Fame yet, but he probably, he might make it.
I hadn't thought of that.
I wanted him to have the first chance. I know it's pretty hard for him, but I just thought he might know. And then your second, David.
You got arms like Arvin
Cobo. What about if David doesn't know it and Thomas doesn't know
it? Well, he's not playing right now, is he?
No, he's not playing right now. But you can see him on television.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Kelly.
Chad's going to kill you. He doesn't even have gray hair.
But no. When Tom Kelly played?
No.
Bert Blylevin.
Bert Blylevin.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I can use that. When I first saw David, I did a double take.
Wow. Well, the sports world constantly likes to debate, you know, what sport is really the American sport and why, and which is the most popular American sport. And I don't know the answers to, you know, what's number one right now, but it's interesting that brand new sports, new to this country like soccer, are gaining such importance and interest, and it probably has to do with the amount of activity that the participants get to do every minute of the game. Yes.
Well, also in speaking to that, I think, and you had talked about the price of tickets. Baseball is not necessarily cost prohibitive, whereas you can get a $5 peanut seat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And hang out in Wrigley Field, even, and you could feel like you're actually there. I mean, you're on the field, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, football tickets are $50 bucks. You watch it on TV, but it's a whole different feeling to be there. So I think, for me, that's one of the, I know I'm not a huge sports fan at all, but if I want to go to watch a game, I think it's fun, and it's $6.
Okay, so these are good perceptions, yeah.
Something I think that helps baseball, too, is the whole minor league system. We've got a Class A farm team in our town, and that if you can't afford to go down to see the Mariners, you can see the Aqua Sox or go see the Rangers or whoever, and that, I think, supports
Of course, professional football has its own minor leagues. It's called the American Universities.
That's what I like about living in Washington, is you don't have to go to the Mariners game to watch a professional game. You can go up and see the Aqua Sox or the Rainiers, and they're both Mariners teams.
Well, one thing I think is a little hypocritical about the goodness of baseball versus others is that, I mean, you know, basketball gets knocked so much in that, you know, these high school kids are coming out for the draft and they're not getting their education, yada, 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 you know. But for years, you know, high schoolers have gone into the farm system. And no one is, you know, better than I. And same with hockey. You know, a lot of people, you know, bypass college and go into the juniors and work their way up until they get in the NHL. So I think that's one thing that, for some reason, there is kind of this golden cloud around baseball, and it is sort of, you can't really bash it. But other sports, and, you know, the NFL is too violent. Hockey is, you know, there's fighting in it, and basketball, it's, you know, you know, it's just a bunch of thugs out there, whatever, but yeah,
okay.
I don't know.
I
think there's plenty of things to point the finger at baseball, too.
None of the sports are squeaky clean, that's for sure. Yeah.
I came to the United States in 1986 for the first time from Germany, and I moved to Minnesota, and guess what? 1987, they won the World Series for the first time. I mean, I was their biggest fan. And the whole excitement, everything was just wonderful. And I had no idea about baseball. I mean, basically, but I enjoyed the most about the sport, and that may be strange, but is the friendliness of the people coming from, coming from Germany, soccer, all of that, you don't want to go to a game. You really don't want to. Oh, but all you hear from, like, England, what's going on in these games, that is just not a family sport. But here, I mean, people bring their whole families, their babies, and I just love it.
Yeah.
I think it's so wonderful.
Good point. Libby?
Well, one thing I'd add to that list is the culinary arts.
Yes.
Because the Mariners cookbook and Thomas's skills have changed my eating and quite a bit, you know, seriously.
I cook David Bell's Dutch babies out of the cookbook for my mom and
Mother's on Mother's Day, I'll add.
We tried to get the kitchen to make hot dogs tonight, but... Yes, question.
And if you go to a farm team game, you might see a whole new professional team.
That's right. Yeah, and that's fun, isn't it? Yeah, that's great. Well, look, it's 7:20. We've got Vespers coming up.
Forget Vespers.
Because of mostly being Minnesota and Seattle fans, as compared to what was being said a year ago with how corrupt baseball is and the Yankees and Braves being able to buy every pennant.
Yeah.
And I think we're kind of on the cloud this year.
Yeah. And it may or may not be the Braves.
It must be the loop.
Well, let's make sure we all have fun with baseball this year and every year. It's a beautiful game, even when the team isn't in first place. But this year we are in first place. So
where's southpaw?
Oh, you know where why a left-hander is called the southpaw?
My mom told me a couple weeks ago. I forgot though. Okay.
The way most baseball parks are lined up, the left-hander standing on the mound is to the south. The left arm is to the south. And it's done this way partly because of the sun and making it.
So why don't they call it right-hander north
ball? Good question. Well, thanks all of you for coming.